dead. Dead.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to Craft Beer is Dead. I always say welcome back.
I mean,
I think we both do.
Yeah.
So I apologize if you're a first-time listener. I'm not trying to like chastise you, but where the fuck have you been?
I mean, it's just statistics. It's most people are listening again versus first time.
I think the one dude in Ireland is just giving us a second chance after all the shit we talked to him that one
second
time.
Second chance? I think it's like
oh,
nine.
Oh, no, I said shit within 2 minutes.
It doesn't matter. I don't think that algorithm
Boop.
Hack. Yeah. Anyway. Hi, guys. Yeah. How are you?
Sorry. This is Bree Face.
Bree here.
Yeah. Pint-sized traveler. I am Chris Face. Here again to present a spooky, 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 spooky tale.
Yeah. This is coming off a little bit of a, lapse in episode. So Chris has been all pent up and... he's just sitting over there vibrating right now. He's like, I have so many spookies.
I was on vacation. It was down in Sarasota. And like, we go to this place that's like right on the beach. It's awesome. So one day I took the laptop. I went down to this like little tiki hut. And like, you couldn't write a better scenario, right? I had an awesome beer with
me.
Some
people write poems.
Yeah. I had a beer with me. I had a cigar. I had just enough Wi-Fi to be able to look shit up. And I'm just like watching the palm trees sway in the wind. And then, My mom actually came up and was like, hey, how are you doing? And I was like, you're the first person I've talked to in 4 hours after writing this. Do you want to hear about murder? And she's like, no, this is, what are you doing?
Murder.
So yeah, we'll be discussing a fun little case. Spoiler alert, somebody's going to die.
Yeah, I have no idea who he's talking about today. So
yeah,
you
who,
guys
what, when,
were
how?
On the same page. But I do know what beer we're about to drink, though.
Yeah, what it is, girl.
So this is... Hop Chowda, hazy IPA from Goldwater Brewing. This is one of our take-homes from our trip to Arizona, which was pretty awesome. This is also one of the beers that I was fortunate enough to get my luggage searched, not once, but twice.
Oh.
Going there and going back because of all the beer that Doug, being the piece of Doug that he is.
Nice save, whatever that was. Being the piece of loving man.
Piece of Doug that he is. He had a duffel bag. I had a legit Jeep branded suitcase that I've had now for 10 years. That is, I mean, war proof. So I bring all the beer to and fro. And so I'm fortunate enough to get my bag searched every single time. So you're welcome for smuggling this back to the States.
We appreciate you and all the hard work you do. Yeah. No, I remember one time I was in this tiny, 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 tiny airport in Delaware. There was literally one TSA port to where you walk through. There were two terminals.
That's Scranton. Yeah.
And so I had a whole luggage case full of beer for the check-on. And I was like, oh, shit, they're going to look into it. And this is going to be really bad. And they opened it. I was like, by the way, there's a lot of beer in there. They're like, we don't care. Like, why would you think we would
unless
care?
Unless it's over a certain amount of fluid ounces.
Well, you can't take it on the plane with you, but you can check it in just fine.
No, I know. Check in. I'm
oh,
talking
really?
About check. There is actually, I just learned this from a regular, and then I was like, got a double, triple check because you can't believe the internet.
Okay.
And looked it up, and there is a max fluid ounces. So you can't just totally stuff your suitcase full of beer. You
all
can.
Right.
There, it's a lot. Don't get me wrong. It's a lot of fucking beer, but it is... capped. That's
all right,
something.
Good to know. I won't bring back magnums of St. Bernard's.
I feel like that's
SAT
something
12.
I should tell you because it's like actually useful information.
Also, fun side story, one of my carry-ons one time from a trip was a 10-tacker that was 3 feet tall from Oscar Blues.
That's pretty cool.
It was pretty fun. People looked at me like I was fucking crazy. Or
I had a lot better trip than you did.
Exactly.
So.
But
that's pretty cool.
We're about to sip on this Hop Chowda. This is their hazy IPA, 6.4%. Notes of peaches, mango, citrus, and juice bombs.
Oh, so. It is meant to be a basketball. Now I'm looking at the...
Oh, yeah, this
I've
is the
literally looked at
edition.
This. I've looked at this can a handful of times, and it does kind of look like the soup can.
It really does.
So it's like a double entendre, I guess, because it is Hop Chowda, and it looks like a basketball court, but it's a very cool brewery.
The thing on the side, like we were talking about earlier, it looks like a basketball court. I didn't say anything else.
That's exactly what he said earlier.
Yeah, no. I did think this was a lot of fun, though, too, because this is, as far as like the hop build goes and the ABV goes, almost the exact same thing as our hop soup. Mm-hmm. It's just one different hop. So they use Mosaic, Citra, and El Dorado.
And one different name for soup. So, I mean, yeah. It's very...
Actually, fuck, yeah. We're basically making
soup. That's hilarious.
Hey, Goldwater, you want to make soup? But
that's super funny.
How is it? Have you tried it yet? I've just been talking the whole time like a dumb man.
I had it at the brewery, too, to be honest. It was... We brought back this, a prickly pear Kolsch, a prickly pear sour. We were in Arizona. Come on, guys. And
just up to their necks in prickly
pears.
And
a Pilsner. Guess how fucking much they sold their Pilsner for. Which I'm not talking shit. If you could do this, fucking do it. But like...
as far as like a pint goes or a 4-pack?
No, a 4-pack.
16.
No.
18.
Like... I think it was 19.
Jesus.
F.
What are they like? I don't even have a good joke for that. Fuck.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, it was
good
like
for you guys.
We love them, and then we got up to the counter and we're like, oh, we fucking good. Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay.
Yeah. Must be that out of state tax.
And then drove that up the mountain, so it was worth it. But this is super yummy. It's I do pretty love solid. This. I like all their stuff.
Follows a lot of the same like the notes that they were talking about. Mm-hmm. If you ever are in that area, they have multiple locations. Package things that you can find from them are the Lil Guave, the Hazy Guava IPA, which sounds pretty dope. The Birthday Suit West Coast IPA. They do sours as well, as you mentioned. And then lastly, the Dynamite IPA.
Sour Prick was the sour. That was really good. Very tart. So if you like them, yeah.
So check them out. All right. You got enough beer for the tail?
Oh, yeah.
You getting all? All right.
Yeah, let's...
Let me pull up the old notes here. You ready?
I don't know.
Gonna warm up the vocals.
You've been festering on a beach with this. I don't know if we'll know if we're ready.
Yeah, this could be a really weird rabbit hole. turns out when you're by yourself on a beach for a while, things
you
happen.
You turn a volleyball into your best friend.
Yeah, exactly. So. All right, here we go. Bum bum. December 31st, 1999. People were a little nervous that evening. For a lot of you younger listeners, probably yourself as well, this date marked the final day of the countdown to Y2K.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember much from that? Or?
Oh, I only do because my dad is one of those.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Holy fucking shit, did he lose his mind for Y2K. So, yeah I remember Y2K.
A lot of people did. So, while clocks inched closer to midnight, tens of thousands of people across the U.S. were terrified that when the ball finally dropped, everyone's bank account would be set to zero. Right?
Yeah.
Which, why did I even fucking do this?
I'm sorry. It's still funny.
It's still funny. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
At the time, many banks' clocks throughout the world only registered the last two digits of the year. And the fear was that at the moment the clocks hit the year 2000, it could potentially register as the year 1900, thereby negating all bank information to a factory reset of zero. Which we have no fucking clue why. It sounds like one guy
told someone that was a possibility, and then it snowballed.
Yeah,
100%.
The start of fake news, if you will, right?
Yes.
But this isn't a story about the fears of Y2K. That would be weird. This story starts in the early morning hours of the first day of the year 2000. The ball had dropped. No one's assets disappeared, and many people...
What?
No one's assets disappeared. I'm sure someone's ass did. It's 2000. Part of like 19,
Everyone's ass did because they spent all their money on fucking canned vegetables.
Yeah, and many people had reason to celebrate more than usual. All their money wasn't gone. How cool is that? So Brian Veltzine, met a few friends at a bar in Chicago around 11:45 on New Year's Eve in 1999. Brian was a 21-year-old finance student at the time, and after a few hours of revelry, decided to end the night around 2:15 in the morning. While most reports I read note that Brian hadn't had much to drink, or in that case, really wasn't that much of a big drinker at all, he was acting highly unusual. He was slurring his words, passing in and out of consciousness, and eventually started becoming physically ill. He left with a few friends, and as they got into a car, they headed back to their hotel. Driver was merely dropping a handful of them off before heading home himself. During the short ride, Brian faded in and out of consciousness and eventually started vomiting in the car. Upon arrival to the hotel, the understandably annoyed driver kicked him and his friends out and began driving home himself. Brian's friends knew that they had to help their seemingly heavily intoxicated friend to the hotel room, but for some reason left him outside while they ran up to the room to grab something and then come back down to retrieve him in a few minutes, right? The driver stated that he remembers seeing Brian incoherently swaying back and forth through the rearview mirror, And this was the last time anyone saw Brian alive.
Dun, dun, dun.
Bum, bum, bum. We've all had crazy nights where a friend just like sort of disappears for a bit. And then, yeah. They usually turn up and pop up without any sort of issues. And you're like, where the fuck were you? And like, I don't know. It was crazy, right?
Yeah.
I literally lost my roommate when I was living in Alaska for 2 days. Oh my God. Only to find him sleeping in the patio furniture at the Walmart in Anchorage. Yeah. We partied hard those days. So it was pretty fun. Brian's friends, however, started becoming concerned when he didn't show up back to the hotel or when they phoned his family to see if they'd heard from him. They only heard that he had gone silent completely. They quickly filled out a missing persons report. I was able to... This is kind of sad because, I mean, as we've all kind of assumed, this isn't probably going to end well for Brian, right? But during the time they were looking for him, once we find out what actually happens to him, the time they were looking for him, like, I would find all these articles that were just these optimistic kind of like written articles from the local papers, mm-hmm. talking to the police, like, oh, I'm sure he's going to turn up. I'm sure. And like, when you know what's about to happen, it's so sad reading all these different various, like, you know, kind of ideas as far as what
super
might be
super optimistic
knowing. Yeah. What's about to come up. So I was able to find an article from the Chicago Tribune dated from February of 2000. This was roughly a month after Brian's disappearance. In the article, Sergeant Bob Battaglini, Mr. Battaglini, Mr. Bob Battaglini, I had to do that, stated that while he'd worked on the force for 34 years, he had only really had to deal with like 4 to 5 mysteries, quote unquote, right?
Okay.
But this was the first time that like it really stuck out to him that like they had nothing to go on. Usually they can talk to friends, family, mm-hmm. and while they may not have a body or be able to find something, they have like some sort of, all right, well, at least like we know so-and-so had it out for him, or he pissed this person off, yeah. or this, that, or whatever. But in this case, they had nothing. Like, he's just gone. Unfortunately, Brian's body was finally discovered a full 77 days after his initial disappearance. Ugh. Brian was found on a beach in Gary, Indiana, a full 30 miles from where he was last seen. Police speculated that he, in his impaired state, had wandered into Lake Michigan where he drowned and eventually drifted the 30-mile difference. Detective Sergeant William Fizakis was the original lead on Brian's case, and after receiving the results on an autopsy, started to suspect that something other than a tragic accident was at play here. For one, the toxicology report stated that Brian's blood was clean of narcotics and had a mere 0.084 blood alcohol level. And this is considered drunk in states, and like it's legally intoxicated in certain states.
How long does alcohol stay in your blood after you die?
So,
and if you're like in the water?
I don't know. That's a good question. You know what I mean? But what I can say is, like, if you're alive, you can usually, like, excrete 0.04 or so per
hour.
That's
a lot of days, you know what I mean?
So, based off of that and, like, kind of witness statements saying that he hadn't really drank that much.
Yeah.
It can be safely assumed that there's, like, 2 to 3 drinks worth in his system. So, the fact that he was, like, kind of had all these
and
symptoms
swaying
of, like,
and
swaying,
all that,
slurring,
yeah.
vomiting, those kind of things. We'll find that there's kind of a key component, and pay attention to the fact that he all of a sudden goes, I need to go. Mm. Like that kind of is a big thing that we'll see pretty prevalent too. Right. So he yes, 0.084, I'm sorry, is legally drunk, but I mean, we've all probably been to that point and we're not like falling over, slurring our words and vomiting on ourselves after 2 to 3, you know what I mean? Not saying you should try to find that out, but.
Standard, I mean, yeah. George just brought his little breathalyzer to a birthday party, and and every single one of us was like pretty much that after just bowling. I mean, it wasn't that hard.
So while like, yes, it is legally intoxicated, you know, it's the theory that Brian being so drunk that he fell into Lake Michigan is still plausible, but it's a little suspect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Aside from that, the decomposition of Brian's body didn't exactly match that of what a body would have after being in the water for 77 days. While he did show signs of being in a lake for some time, he lacked a few indicators that inherently present themselves when a body is in the water for over 2 months.
So he was dumped.
Possibly.
Yeah.
So not to be gross, there's a couple of things that inevitably happen to a body when it's been in water for a while, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got bloating.
Mm-hmm.
You have microabrasions, things mm-hmm. that happen like when as the, you know, the body bloats and it's bumping into rocks or, mm-hmm. you know, different types of landscapes or whatever.
And there's probably like fish and stuff like
a little nibbling.
Eating. Yeah.
There's also something known as skin slippage, which is kind of gross, and is exactly what it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. It's so I only know this because I had a paramedic friend who found someone who was in a bathtub for a really long time.
Oh, my God.
And they had to pick them out, and, like, ow! Let's just say they slid out of there.
essentially, like, if you've ever seen, like, a snake molt or whatever it's called, it eventually is that.
Pretty
much. Your top layer of your epidermis just kind of slides
and
off.
And it's like...
Yeah, you turn into soup.
Yeah.
Speaking of soup, this pop chowder is fantastic. There's that. So there's that skin slippage. And to top it off, drowning victims typically exhibit some level of foreign fluid in the lungs. So like there's a last kind of breath attempt to where you flood your lungs out. There was nothing in his lungs. And sometimes they'll look for sand in the stomach and those kind of things. Nothing.
So it didn't
there.
Drown. So allegedly.
Yeah. So based off the physical evidence gathered from Brian's body, one could deduce that he'd only been in the water for roughly a week at best. No abrasions, no skin slippage, no fluid in the lungs, no sand in the stomach. And so with this one specifically, it's left as undetermined as cause of death.
Mm-hmm.
So not saying he did drown, not saying he didn't, but also it's enough to definitively say he didn't just fall into a fucking lake and be sitting there for 77 days. Right?
I feel like it'd be easier to definitively say there's a lot of water in the lungs or there's not. It's just, I don't know.
It's there. It's either there or it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, whatever.
Brian's case is still ruled an accidental drowning. This isn't the first time a random college-age male has been found miles from their spot of disappearance and under such suspicious circumstances. And in fact, it seemed eerily similar to a case from 1997. Another dude. Here we go. Patrick McNeil spent the evening of February 16th, 1997, drinking with his friends at the Dapper Dog in Manhattan's Upper East Side. So this is basically across the nation. The Dapper Dog had become a favorite hangout for students of Fordham University. It was the kind of college bar that basically there's a solid nightlife, but not so strict a ID policy, if you will, right? So around midnight, Patrick returns from the bathroom after getting sick to let his friends know that he has to go. He's making the decision I feel like shit. I gotta, something's weird. I gotta get out of here, right? He's feeling unusually inebriated and wanted to return to the safety of his dorm room. He stumbles to the front door as a female friend stops him and basically says that, hey, I'll go with you to make sure you get home. Okay, just hold on a second. I'm gonna run to the restroom. She doesn't kind of come back in enough time to where Patrick decides that he wants to start kind of venturing off. Witnesses state that while his companion was away, he began to kind of stumble up the road, falling every now and then, getting back up, trying to
the same exact MO.
Only this time he wasn't alone. So a double parked van also began headed the same direction. So slowly tailing Patrick as he stumbled along the sidewalk. It would stop when he would, it would stop when he fell, and it would start going the same speed he would when he started walking again. Patrick hung a left onto East 90th Street, and so did the van, and this was the last time he was seen alive. So it was noticeable enough to where he is so inebriated that everyone in the front of a club, or bar or whatever it is, a bunch of college kids at midnight are going, holy fuck, look how drunk that guy is. And then enough of them are going, oh shit, why is that van following him? So witnesses gave a partial license plate to the police, but the tip went cold after they couldn't provide a full match of whatever the vehicle was.
Yeah, who could remember that?
Yeah.
Well,
even then, too, could have been a different plate, could have been anything, really.
Yeah, easily switched out, but still, how would you remember a plate standing in line at a bar?
Well, I was at the Dapper Dog. Well, you're fucking useless, because we all know what happens there.
Exactly.
Yeah. It wasn't until after a month that Patrick's body was discovered near the Brooklyn Pier. The police quickly ruled this as a tragic accident, much as they had done with Brian, stating that the inebriated McNeil must have stumbled into the river and drowned. But, yet again, we are found with an odd series of details surrounding his body's discovery. For one, Patrick was found floating face up. And while this isn't impossible, it is highly improbable. Most drowning victims are usually found face down. Add to that the fact that Patrick had blood pooling toward the front of his body, suggesting that he had died kind of on his stomach and in a more gravity-heavy situation as opposed to the water, suggests that he might have been somewhere else and not in the water for that amount of time. Also, the weird fact that, from where he was last seen, Patrick would have had to cross an expressway, a six-lane expressway, climb fencing, and then jump over multiple barricades to fall in the water. So,
why would you do that?
Even if you're sober, it's a fucking challenge.
Yeah.
Let alone being inebriated and be like, oh, I'm going to go pee way over there. Yeah, that's stupid. His autopsy also left room for speculation. Patrick's blood alcohol level came back to a 0.16, which is pretty high, yeah, but pretty also high. Like it's, I would argue it's not like slur your speech, fall down, vomit all over yourself. Like you're probably feeling pretty good.
Yeah, you're probably slurring a little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But as far as like completely blacked out,
you're not
out,
piss
yeah.
yourself drunk. Yeah. No.
His drug test came back negative as well, and there was evidence that Patrick had been bound. There were ligature marks on his neck and burned before making contact with the water.
Well, yeah, that's definitely dicey.
Right? So there's that. There's also the presence of fly larvae around his groin. How gross is that?
So how is that relevant?
Well, it does tell us that like he was not in the water the whole time.
Okay.
So...
because they wouldn't like grow or live or be alive.
The night Patrick disappeared, the temperature was in the low 20s, well outside the normal temperature range for fly larvae to propagate, suggesting that Patrick may have been in a room temperature environment for some time. Also, probably a dry environment, too. So, yeah. The lead detective, Kevin Gannon, suspected much more than an accident, obviously. But that's a fucking crazy part, too. Just a side note is that, like, the medical or like the autopsy physicians or whatever are basically going, all right, so. Here's the findings. I don't know how I died. Undetermined. They turf it back to the police, but because everyone's kind of waiting on the other person's direction, the police are like, all right, well, he probably drowned because it didn't say he didn't drown.
Yeah.
Right? So the lead detective, Kevin Gannon, thinks it's not an accident, obviously. Upon researching similar cases, Gannon found dozens of files of missing men, all white, sometimes Asian, all in their early 20s, all involved in academics and athletics in their prospective colleges, and all of them in mysterious drownings.
Ewie.
One thing that many of them had in common was the sighting of a graffiti-style smiley face painted near the discovery of the bodies, hence the moniker, the Smiley Face Killings. So this is an entirely new theory, a new like kind of conspiracy coming up that as we'll kind of go in and talk to, you know, just a broad overstroke of it's just like there's a group of people who believe that there's a full operation going on while most like on ground detectives are like, nah. So following his hunch, Gannon met with Detective Anthony Duarte and Dr. Lee Gilbertson. When the three discussed various findings throughout the cases that they'd been involved in, they came to a startling conclusion. They suspected that there was an active killer or group of killers preying on young college males throughout the U.S., and their theory, again, became known as the Smiley Face Killings. After compiling what they felt was enough evidence, the three went on went on a live press conference and basically stated that they believe that from Wisconsin to New York, that they had evidence noting that there was a particular M.O. for up to 60 to 70 different cases of just mysterious drownings, right? And a lot of these, like up to 60 to 70% of them, there's found like some sort of smiley face graffiti mm-hmm. mark around where the body's been found, right?
And they all look the same, like the same looking smiley face?
20 to 20, well, no. As far as the smiley faces go, that's where it gets weird too, is they're all slightly different. Mm-hmm. And that's where we can start kind of picking it apart later.
Yeah.
Is, you know, they as they keep researching, as they keep going into specifics, they start stating that the case count is far higher. And that proportionally, the amount of smiley faces involved is getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller.
And statistically, out of all the graffiti in the world and stuff, especially back then when people like kind of weren't that clever, how many of them were just smiley faces? Like, don't you see them on rocks and shit all the time?
That was a big component as far as the
argument
against
you. So, like, is that like one of the top most drawn things?
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's another component of it as well, stating like. Yeah, they're around, but none of them are similar.
Gotcha.
But some of them too.
But it's like enough to be noted.
It's enough to go, oh shit, there's a connection there. But yeah. Then also too, there was a couple victims that had traces of whatever material was used to make the smiley face on their clothing. To suggest that they are around the actual substance used to make this
like
actual...
Like the paint and stuff? Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So... the FBI quickly dismissed the theory. Many of these cases had been labeled as accidental drownings, and the FBI stuck to those conclusions. And while it was suspicious that so many young men had disappeared in a very specific way, they just couldn't or wouldn't believe that something of that magnitude would be plausible. But that all slightly changed with William Hurley. In this particularly tragic incident, William was attending a Boston Bruins game in October of 2009. This one is just... fucking sad with the way it plays out. Halfway through the game, he began feeling very ill. He noted, or like his friends noted, he hadn't really had much to drink, maybe a beer or two, and he became very, very disoriented. The 24-year-old Navy veteran called his fiance to pick him up. But when she arrived at the pre-agreed upon meeting area, he was nowhere to be found. She circled the area for hours, got out of the car, calling into the streets, and found nothing. Parking lot footage shows Hurley stumbling through the facility, but was unable to follow his whereabouts once he left the actual facility. Patrick was found 6 days later in a river. So not too terribly long of a time span in accordance to the rest of these, but it was still a mystery as far as how he ended up there. But
and how this person is getting, or these people are getting them to be sick to start. It's not like it's like, okay, the guys being the common denominator, like, okay, it makes sense. But it's like, how are they making them sick?
Yeah, and then that's the thing too, is like these narcotics or the tox screens are coming back negative, right? Yeah. So what the fuck's going on? So there's a few things that that stood out as far as like when they found him or the circumstances leading up to Brian's disappearance. So for one, William's cell phone was found near the meeting spot that he had suggested to his fiance. When Hurley had called his wife, he noted, or he had stated that he didn't know where he was, but was speaking to somebody near him while he was on the phone, only to have that person basically tell him where he was and him give that information, only for the phone to go silent immediately after, right? When the phone was discovered, its battery was removed and it was damaged in a very specific way, right? One expert stated that the damage was a type of infliction known as like a twist and snap, like the old school flip phones. This isn't one of those kind of things.
Not
where,
like it didn't get run over, like exactly. Something that just would make
this
sense.
This was a specific torque on a specific motion to snap it into two, right? Something they only see when somebody is actively trying to destroy a phone. Perhaps the most telling piece of evidence was that the discovery
that's of, clever to like look at how the phone was
isn't that crazy?
Broken. Yeah, that's pretty clever.
This is the first time that we see GHB in the system of a victim though. And it's like I know that people use the drug recreationally.
And what
which,
is it?
GHB. So date rape drug.
Yeah, that's just like what is the street name? I don't really
I actually don't like roofie, technically.
Just
right?
roofie then?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Not
what
Flories.
The difference.
I don't know why they don't call them Flories, but
some grounders.
This is the first time that we see GHB popping up. And while people use it recreationally, which if you're doing that, fucking get your life together, you weirdo. But he doesn't have a background to indicate that he would typically do something like this. And it kind of shows that this wasn't necessarily a voluntary dose. This is kind of where it opens up a little bit more to that. It's not necessarily a conspiracy theory. As far as the smiley face killings goes, and as far as like these detectives and the doctor that are working together to try to perpetuate it. But it's another one of those things where like something like this where GHB pops up on a system, like why weren't the other ones? And when they look into it, the common like tox screens at the time didn't check for GHB. So we'll never know if all the other ones were...
Well, that's fucking dumb.
Right? So there's that. So odds
so
are
why
highly
didn't
likely.
They then? And because they were guys too. Do you think that was less likely that they didn't test for that specifically? Because if it was like a female acting disoriented, he'd be like, okay, let's test for date rape.
Sure.
Like, you know.
Yeah, or at the same time too, like guys. I don't know. It happens to them too, but obviously not nearly as often as women.
No, and especially at that time, like there's just like they just should have just run the whole spectrum of what. Drugs or what could incapacitate someone if it wasn't alcohol, then what is it, you know?
And you bring up the facet of time, right? So like, you know, when you were growing up, when did you start hearing these PSAs of like, watch out for your drinks, watch out for this, watch out for that? Like, it wasn't all the time.
I don't think
you want
to know. Yeah.
I mean, it just kind of like started like what, mid-2000s, late-2000s kind of?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like,
so,
I mean, yeah.
Maybe they're just now, as it's becoming more prevalent and becoming more of a utilized resource for people to victimize people, they're starting to incorporate it a little bit more, right?
I feel like in the 90s it was a thing, though.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, because the 80s were coming off the drug. I don't know. I mean, that's just a total assumption, but I don't know. I feel like 90s was late enough that was stupid of them not to test for it.
Yeah.
You know.
Also, in the background, we have our boiler. We are in the brewery today, so fucking deal with it.
Yeah.
So that is kind of the big key component of this guy's case is that for the first time, we know that they're being drugged.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't know specifically. He could have used it, but why the fuck would you do that if he had to be at work at 6 a.m. and he's never been known to do something like this, right?
And he's not going to call his wife.
Exactly. So sadly, most of these cases leave far more questions than answers. Things like, why are there so many unusual circumstances around these deaths? Why is the FBI so dismissive to the possibility of some sort of like murderous choreography or network or something like that? Mm-hmm. And is it that it's so common for drugged college-age men to stumble into an untimely watery grave? Or is it just fucking possible that there might be a network of people preying on unsuspecting men throughout the nations, right? So, you know, as I kind of got a little bit further into this, you know, oxygen was a big resource, actually, because they've just started doing a whole documentary on six of the victims.
Oh, really?
Rolling Stone did a piece on it, a couple different local newspapers and stuff like that on some of the articles. But, you know, there is a very, very specific pattern. And for me, like, when they talk about how many cases there are, talking specifically about the group of three gentlemen, the two detectives and the doctor who are trying to perpetuate this, you know, their case count is somewhere in like the high to mid 300s, right? So that's a lot of fucking people. But even the three we covered all seem super sus.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's kind of hard to just
write it off. That's just not what they're going to do. That's not what they're about. They're not going to go get fucked up and go fall in a river.
Exactly.
Cross a 6-lane highway to go piss. Like.
Exactly. So there's that. So either we have a murderous ring of serial killers actually hunting down people, which isn't that fucking crazy.
It isn't. And especially if you add any type of religious component into it, like it's not like it's Satanism's MO for the smiley faces or anything, but you know what I'm saying. Like something like that where it's just a guy convinces a bunch of people like, hey, this is what's going to get you into the afterlife and get you a really, you know, some virgins or something.
Some sort of cult, sort of like karmic debt kind of thing.
Then there's so many crazy fucking cults out there that aren't even, I don't know, religious speaking. Like, it's just out there thinking. So it's very feasible.
Well, there's that. There's a serial killer network theory. There's the just that they were drunk, which is fucking insane to me. Like, yes, some of them probably. Maybe you could even say 50. If you want to be generous, say 50-50. That 50-50.
That's a lot, yeah.
That's a lot. That's still, like, even if, like, 10 out of 350-something are actual murders, that's kind of terrifying because that means that there's some sort of a serial killer or a network of people targeting people. One that I thought was interesting was, look, got a little buggy over here. I got to get it off. One was gang initiations.
Yeah.
Which could check, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's a very specific
type
of MO.
It really could.
And, like...
That does make sense.
Couple things on the last case. So this guy, William Hurley. Couple creepy factors. One, he was one of 10 people found in the same fucking river of the same body type within, like, a year. So either put a fucking fence up... Or start looking into why these fucking athletic white dudes just keep drowning in this river. Jesus Christ. And then two, I don't have any like documented kind of evidence of this, but one of the stories that I had heard on a show I was listening to about these, this specific case, the fiance noted that 4 days beforehand, William had gone out with some friends, had asked her to pick him up, same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
He seemed a little out of it. But when she went to go pick him up, he was about to get into an SUV as though he was being coaxed in by somebody, only for him to, like, turn around and abandon the idea as she finally called out and was like, William, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
And he turned around, SUV takes off.
Huh.
So, it's right the fucking there. Like, to me, like, the evidence is there that at least some of these are basically people being targeted for some sort of reason. It's just a matter of why, you know?
Yeah. So when she noted that and everything, were they not able to pull surveillance and see, like, even just a van there talking to him and that being enough for them to be like, okay, like, that's a little odd, too. Like, you know, it's the 90s. It's not like it was 100 years ago.
My biggest issue with this case or with this theory, right?
Yeah, like, you know what I mean.
1997 up till, you know, there are some that are suspected to be up till like 2018, 2019 as well.
Yeah.
So even if it's, let's just call it 300, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're the FBI, how are you just stating automatically that it's just not possible that 300 men have just all been so intoxicated that they fell into a body of water, drowned, And then despite all physical evidence stating that, like, they haven't been in the water for that long, or that they're 30 miles away from where they actually disappeared, or that, like, people were following them, that you can conclusively say that, oh, no, it's just a drowning. Like, there's no reason to reopen the case.
Is that the number that Oxygen throws out there, too? Like, those documentaries, throw, like, at least 100 people out there?
If you look at, like, the
detectives... Or they're only talking about a couple, like, those four.
They highlighted six. In true fashion, I mean, like, you know, like, we talked about some that are a little, like, for lack of a better term, I feel terrible saying this, but a little bit more juicy as far as the details go, right? But it really helps drive the point home.
But
you
the
know.
Possibility, like, they haven't really touched on how far or how big it really could be yet.
Mm-mm.
No?
No, so, I mean, it sounds... I haven't checked out any of the episodes, just kind of read up on a lot of the key components of it.
Good to watch.
But, yeah, it's just one of those kind of things that, like, when you... The further you go down, it's one of those weird stories that life presents, and not to say that it's a good story because of the outcome or the victims or anything like that, but it's a story to be respected because no matter what side of the fence you fall on, you can't have a solid argument. Like, yeah, well, or what part of the river you fall in, right? You can't like 100% say that it is that side, right? Mm-hmm. So until something pops up or, I don't know, until they actually start reopening some of these cases, I guess if you're a 20 to 25-year-old white or Asian dude who's in athletics and you're doing great in college, cover your fucking drink or just don't go out.
Just don't go out.
Yeah. So.
Man, that is wild. That's a lot of people.
And that's just happening.
And very specific, yeah.
Yeah. It's very specific, and like one of the big things too is... You know, they talk about how the FBI is like, oh, it's just not possible. It's just not possible. But, and we'll cover a lot of other cases that just seemed impossible.
Pretty sure they said that about fucking aliens even 5 years ago. And yeah, here and we are.
Talking about UFOs.
The same people.
Right? What the fuck? Or like, you know, you look at like Robert Hansen, who we're definitely going to cover, basically hunted women in Alaska, kidnapped them, and then would just make them run into the woods like fucking pest style.
Yeah.
And then just like off them in the woods. You had like Israel Keyes, who would drive all throughout the entire U.S. and just murdered people randomly, and actually had stashes of kill kits, like would bury duffel bags full of killing equipment in random wooded areas, only just to be like, all right, so like, I'll
you
be in a
don't do that.
I don't. No, man. Like, it's a good idea, but it's already been done. Am I right? But all these things at the time, people were like, oh, there's no way. It's fucking happening. Just because it hasn't happened and just because it's like not the commonality of something doesn't mean you shouldn't look into it. That's just me getting like really pissed off about it. Stop working on conjecture. Just fucking like look into these cases, you fucking weirdos. But
no, it's I feel your anger on that. That is very, and it's bullshit that they didn't do the correct toxicology on the previous, you know, the first people. Because that could have been a big help, you know?
Yeah. But it's just...
Because what if all of them, they all came up that drug? I don't know.
It's not impossible.
Could have just been something.
Yeah. But it's super suspect, so... yeah, look more into it if you're interested into it. It's a fascinating...
You can watch those shows.
Yeah. Oxygen Network. Also, thank you to Rolling Stone, Wikipedia, Chicago Tribune, all those different things as far as like where I got some information from. Please don't sue us. So yeah. That is everything for That Spooky.
Well, dang. Do you feel better? Do you get like just having like one story off your chest? I know you have a lot of pent up murders and cult and aliens. So
yeah,
I'm glad you got one out.
Every time I do these, like I feel like I've just like I've gone to like a golden corral and I don't care about COVID. And I just shove my face full of all the bullshit details, all the chocolate fountains, all the weird fried fish. I can't tell if it's kiwi or a pear. I don't know. I don't care. I'm going to eat it. And then afterwards, like... I just need to get it all out of me because I immediately just like feel guilty
regret.
For it. Yeah. I'm like mentally constipated.
Like I'm happy, but
yeah, I just need to like do a mental duty and then get it all out. So.
Oh man. The chocolate fucking fountain.
Ugh, speaking of mental duty. Ay, ay, ay. But yeah, that's all
we
got.
Thanks, Chris. That was a good one.
Yeah.
I'm going to sleep sounder tonight knowing. That's not
knowing that,
my,
like, you're
not
the
demographic.
White male. Also, when's the last time you heard of one of those targeted? Yeah, that's the scary part, right? But so, outside of that, we got some cool episodes coming up. Like we talked about last time, we've been doing a lot of work as far as getting some fun guests on, getting some cool information on here.
Yep.
Spookies, we're diving a little bit more into as well. I think on my next one, I'm going to go a little bit more historical, which should be kind of fun. I don't know what you're working on. Wait, don't tell us. And then, yeah, keep up with everything we're doing on Instagram, Facebook, all the social media platforms. Don't be afraid to actually like drop some comments and like let us know what you're thinking, where you want to see the show go, all that kind of stuff. We're getting great engagement on that so far. 5 stars Apple, you know the deal. Do that shit or don't. I don't care. And Sticker Wolf, thanks for being dope. You know what you do.
Thanks, man.
Seriously, guys, you're killing it.
Nope. I guess until next time.
Well, I thought I silenced my phone, but let Hans Zimmer play you out.
Fucking nerd.
Goddamn stupid technology. Oh, gotta go. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
I try to get this right every time. We'll get it one day.
Dead. Dead. Dead.